this. Okay, so thank you everybody who's read, and I'll take this opportunity to welcome those who may have joined us since we first started. Particularly welcome to any visitors with us this evening. We're really glad you're here, and a huge welcome to any newcomers that might be. And we hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. And we are a speaker meeting tonight, and I'm going to let Jerry introduce our speaker. So Jerry, over to you.
I'm an addict. My name is Jerry.
Hello, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay. Our speaker tonight, I met when I showed up at a meeting up in Canada a couple of months ago. And I've been going to meetings with this individual for the last couple of months, on and off, up in Canada. And she's there on a regular basis. And I always appreciate what she has to share when she's in the meeting, because it's a meeting where a majority of the people in the meeting have less than 9 months. And which makes them interesting, the meetings interesting. And it takes me back to when I had less than a year in this program. And it's nice not to be the only person that's grounded in this program. And I see that in her when she shares her message. And I look forward to listening to her experience, strength, and hope. And she just celebrated a milestone, and I'll let her tell you about that. Lisa B., would you please share with us tonight?
Thank you, Jay. I'm an addict named Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa. Welcome.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hello. It's really good to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Jay, and thank you to the home group for having me. I met Jay in the meeting he was talking about, and it's true, because the meeting has a lot of newcomers in it, and it has done the same thing for me in my recovery. I just celebrated 13 years clean on Sunday, and the meeting has, the meeting has, allowed me to remember what it was like when I first came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and was trying to get, a day clean, a 30-day key tag, a 60-day key tag, a 90-day key tag, and the struggle, in those early days of my recovery. I listened to people talk about, going back out and using over their feelings, and how hard it is to start feeling again after so many years of numbing. And that's what I did. Like, the disease of addiction is a disease of feelings, not wanting to feel. And for years before I got clean, I was afraid to feel what was natural, normal feelings in response to life. And, so I used drugs to numb. I used drugs to escape. I used drugs to feel something different than what I was feeling. For a long time that worked. Drugs were my solution to my problem of not wanting to feel. Now, it was a bad solution, because along with the drugs came a whole lot of chaos. And I in the beginning, using was fun, right? And I didn't look at it for the chaos that it was causing, the unmanageability. I looked at it as, hey, yeah, we're having a good time, party, blah, blah, blah. But even in the early days of my using, when it was quote unquote just alcohol, I was putting myself in dangerous situations, and I was being, sexually traumatized, and I was, I was just not who I needed to be. I used alcohol just like I used drugs later on, and you know, our literature says alcohol is a drug. I didn't know that because, you know, alcohol is socially acceptable and it's sold on street corners everywhere. And, you know, it's social lubricant. And for me, it was, you know, it was okay. But, you know, I couldn't do just one any more than I could do just one of my drug of choice. So, you know, I went from, I'll just give you a little background on me. I grew up in a two-parent household. I lived in the suburbs. My parents are together today after, 50 plus years. My life was not, tragic by any means. I went to good schools. I got good grades. People look at me today and I say that I'm in recovery and they look at me like you're an addict. And, you know, I don't say that to disqualify myself. I say that to say, yes, I belong. Like the disease of addiction does not discriminate. It does not look at me or any one of you and say, because of who you are, you don't belong. It says, despite who you are, you belong, right? And so, you know, despite my upbringing, having, you know, not the best of everything, but a lot of good things in my life, I am still an addict. And it comes from a variety of things. I have mental health issues. I have abandonment issues. I have issues with, you know, things that happened in my childhood. You know, my dad was a very high-level executive. He moved job to job. He got headhunted. So every time he got a promotion or got job hunted, headhunted to a new position, we moved across the country, the United States. So, you know, I wasn't just changing homes in the same town. I was moving across a country. So I was always new. I was always, I was always on the outside of the clique. I was always the loner. You know, I didn't fit because I wasn't somebody who had been with the same group of people growing up together in school with my friends, and fitting into those circles, right? So I spent a lot of time on my own and I didn't party. I didn't, you know, I lived in this fantasy world, and fantasy was like my first addiction, because I didn't want to live the life I was living because I was lonely and I was, I just felt different. And so I created a world where I fit. You know, and as I got older, I went to college. You know, college exposed me to my next drug of choice, which was men, you know, and men and alcohol together, which was even better. And, you know, that resulted in, you know, the good times that I felt like I had, and it also resulted in me getting raped because I was under the influence, and you know, and me getting into relationships that were really not good, and me not willing to look at that until later on in my life when I repressed that memory of being raped for years, like 10 years. And, you know, talk about not being willing to feel things, like my brain just turned it off. And using alcohol and drugs was a way for me to just not remember that, not feel it. And, you know, I have a medical condition that's a chronic, painful condition, and I had a lot of surgeries through my 20s and 30s, and that's when I got introduced to my drug of choice. And somewhere along the way, I figured out that it didn't just kill my pain, my physical pain, it killed my emotional pain. And, you know, for me, that was like, oh God, this stuff is wow. And so I started to abuse it, and I went from, you know, I had a standing script at my doctor's office, you know, every 30 days I went to, you know, trust the old pharmacy to pick it up. But that 30-day prescription started running out after 20 days, and then it was running out after 10 days, and then it was, and so, you know what we do. I was buying it off the street. And, you know, thank God, you know, I stopped with opiates, with pain medication, and I didn't end up using heroin. But I still was doing all of the lying, manipulating, stealing, cheating, anything I had to do to get one more. You know, I was married for 20 years. I have two boys. My marriage was not great. He was emotionally abusive, a very angry man. Again, I felt like I felt justified in using. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I felt like I deserved to use, because, you know, my marriage was bad and I was stressed out and I was supporting the family and this and that and the other. And dang, if I didn't, you know, deserve to use. And that's so crazy because, you know, the unmanageability that it was causing in my life, you know, financially, emotionally, spiritually, physically, like so many ways that I was just collapsing inside, and my unmanageability wasn't as external as it was internal. I didn't start to look at that till I got here, till I got to NA. What I did start to realize is that, you know, I wanted to stop. I started to realize that maybe I had a problem, and I wanted to stop. And when I tried to stop, I couldn't. And I was surprised that I couldn't, because I thought, well, maybe I could just use on the weekends, or maybe I could just use this many, or maybe I could just drink, or maybe I could just, you know. So I thought, I'm smart enough to outwit this disease. I'm smart enough to outthink this disease. And it didn't work. It did not work. And of course, I learned in here that this is you can't outthink this disease. It has nothing to do with intelligence. It has to do with the disease of addiction and surrendering and understanding that we are completely powerless over the disease until we stop using, until we have admitted our powerlessness and unmanageability. So I couldn't stop. I tried multiple times on my own, and finally I decided I would go to treatment and I would try something different. And treatment sent me to the rooms of NA. And I'd never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I heard of the other fellowship, but I had never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. So, you know, I tried the meetings in the other fellowship, and I did not feel like I fit in there. I didn't identify, and I didn't feel like I could talk about my drug of choice, and my disease, and what was going on with me. When I came to NA, I heard me. Like, I heard my feelings coming out of the mouths of other addicts. And that was very attractive to me, because I felt like I was in the right place. And, it, you know, for somebody who felt like I hadn't fit in for my entire life, to finally feel like I was in the right place, that was like a miracle to me. And you know, today I know that was the God of my understanding. And you know, so I kept coming, you know, I kept coming. And I struggled my first year. I'm not going to lie. I struggled my first year because I maintained that alcohol was not a drug, despite, you know, the fact that I never could control it. I still thought I could, you know, make an exception for that. And that didn't work, because alcohol ended up being my gateway right back to my drug of choice, because I liked my drug of choice much more than I liked alcohol. So I did learn that alcohol is a drug, and I say that to every sponsee I have. And you know, I hear in meetings a lot that people think they can drink, and I tell them the same thing that people told me: keep coming back. You know, you're welcome here. And nobody threw me out. Nobody told me to stop coming. People told me just keep coming back, because in here we learn through experience, strength, and hope, right? And that's what I held on to, is people's experience, strength, and hope. I found some amazing women in the rooms. I went through a couple of sponsors early on who I just didn't really connect with very well, until I found a sponsor who was the one. Like, she and I went through like the first six steps together, and I found a place where I could say whatever. I could talk about me and whatever I had done and not get judged, and not be told like what an evil person I was, or like when I talked about my truth, nobody rolled their eyes or like looked at me in disgust, or I got a lot of head nods, and like you people knew what I was talking about and understood. And that was amazing, you know. And so I started to accumulate some clean time. You know, my sponsor was very big on step work and getting to know a higher power. And, you know, I'm so thankful for that experience with her. She got cancer in May and died by November. So, you know, in the space of 6 months in my second year clean, you know, to go through that with her. I stayed clean through it because of the gifts that she had given me, the step work and the guidance and the encouragement and the acceptance and like the spiritual principles that we practice in here. She was a living example of the spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous. And I try to embody those, you know, on any given day. I don't do it perfectly. I have character defects that still come out. I've gone through all 12 steps and gone back around, about to go back on my sixth step for a second time. I don't do step work very quickly, but I do it thoroughly. And I believe that if you're in a 12-step program and you're not doing the steps, then why are you here? You know, I that doesn't make sense to me. I've been in service since the day I got here. You know, they had me making coffee and setting up chairs and cleaning up chairs and doing, you know, even doing readings and sharing. That is all service to a meeting. You know, I ended up being in service in my home group, and now I'm in service at the area level. I've been in service at the conventions, and service has absolutely contributed to me staying clean. It keeps me active in the fellowship. It keeps me engaged, you know, with the people here. And it's, you know, if you're new, like, get involved. It is a great way to meet people, especially people who have time. It's a great way to, you know, you start to look forward to doing your service work. And so you don't want to use, you know, you don't want to let people down. You don't want to go anywhere. You just want to stay here and do service and just help people. So, yeah, I'm like a big proponent of service work. I just want to talk about my family for a minute and then I'll wrap up. I'm not sure how long I have, but, you know, I have two boys, and because of this disease, you know, I went through a really hard time with my older son. Not because of my active addiction, oddly enough, but because I have the disease of addiction. And he became very resentful over the possibility that he could go down the same road that I went down, and that he had to watch out for his partying, his alcohol consumption, his future. He had to be careful. He was very resentful about that. And he was resentful that once I got some time under me and some women under me, I was able to walk away from that marriage. And he didn't speak to me for the better part of 3 years. And so I missed a lot in his high school years, and it was really devastating to me. And I like fought that tooth and nail in the beginning. I tried to force him to talk to me. I tried to, you know, yeah, I would text him, I would call him, everything, and all I would get back is like negativity, mean comments, all of that. And then finally, somebody in the fellowship, one of the women in the fellowship, said to me, "What happens when you reach out to him?" I said, "He says something nasty." And she said, "Well, why are you doing that to yourself?" And I was like, "Damn, you're right. I am doing it to him. He's not doing it to me. I'm doing it to me." So I backed off. I backed off. I took suggestions from women who had gone through the same thing as me and men, and I backed off. And within a few months, he started reaching out to me. And we have a beautiful relationship today. We've healed. I've made amends. And that's the possibility in this program. Like, no matter what you've gone through with family members, friends, whomever, if you stay clean a day at a time, you can become okay with other people in your life. Even if they don't change, even if they don't accept your amends, you can become better with it. I'm going to stop there because I don't want to kind of start rambling, and I'm eager to hear what you guys have to say. But I'm going to say this. If you're new, please stay in your seat, put your seatbelt on, and give yourself the gift of recovery because you deserve it. Thank you for letting me share.